This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Masterclass. Learn from the best to be your best.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 893. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about boat tours and ferries, Table Mountains and fjords, cod fishing and Vikings as we go to Newfoundland and Labrador in Canada. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Newfoundland and Labrador. I'd like to welcome to the show Bree Mitchell from TravelingMitch.com, who's come to the show to talk to us about Newfoundland and Labrador. Bree, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
So we're talking about provinces in Canada. I think most people know that. What's your connection with Newfoundland and Labrador?
I actually spent the month of August last summer working with Newfoundland and Labrador Tourism with my partner, Chris Mitchell. We were both writers in residence with the tourism board there. We spent an entire month going from the east part of the province to as far west as we could, which we'll be talking about today, and then back again. And it was really just an amazing experience to see how not only the different places in Newfoundland are so beautiful and in Labrador as well, but how the people and the culture and what's informed all of the parts of the province differ quite a lot as well. So that's my connection, and that's what I want to get into today.
And you are from Canada, just not that part of Canada.
Yes, of course. Sorry about that. So yes, I am very much connected to Canada. So I'm from Toronto, born and raised. I lived abroad for several years in South Korea and in Turkey, and I've been back in Canada now for, I think, 7 years again, which feels wild because it always feels like I only just came back, but the pandemic did strange things to time. And so here we are. But yeah, so I'm from Toronto. I have Ontario travel website as well. So I do a lot of coverage of kind of local Canadian travel experiences. And it was really great to check out Newfoundland and Labrador because I'd personally never been.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Newfoundland and Labrador?
Someone should go to Newfoundland and Labrador because it is a very vast, wide, and open province. It has extremely warm people, very enticing outdoor adventures, really incredible opportunities to get out onto the water and explore different parts of the Atlantic Ocean. And specifically today, I want to talk a little bit about Western Newfoundland and Labrador. Okay. So starting in the western coast and making your way up towards Labrador. And the reason that I wanted to focus on that is because I think a lot of people, when they think of Newfoundland and Labrador, they think of St. John's, they think of the jelly bean houses, they think about the cod fishing.
The jelly bean houses being colorful houses.
Yes.
Not houses actually made of or containing jelly beans.
No, we have a lot of quirky things in Canada, but I don't think that we have any actual houses made of jelly beans. They wouldn't fare too well in the weather conditions in Newfoundland, that's for sure. So a lot of people think about St. John's when they think about Newfoundland, and then they think about the western parts of Newfoundland and then Labrador almost as an afterthought, which is really unfortunate because the province itself is massive. It's larger than many countries. I think I was looking up its area. It's a square kilometer area, and it's larger than Japan, Germany, and Finland. A lot of people think of Eastern Canada as being small and little towns and not a lot to explore. But when you think about its size, Newfoundland and Labrador as a province is very expansive. So it's a great place to go if you enjoy a road trip, if you enjoy taking in many kilometers in a day, which this trip will entail. And it's just a really wonderful place to get outside and really embrace nature.
Excellent. What itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
So for today, I'm going to talk about a 7-day itinerary, which starts in Deer Lake. So Deer Lake is on the west coast of Newfoundland. And if you ask Newfoundlanders what the difference is between the east and west coast, they'll say there's a very large difference. And that's true because in the western part of Newfoundland, it becomes mountainous, which is not exactly the case in eastern Newfoundland. So there's actually a geological shift as you make your way west. The city of Deer Lake, or I guess I should say the town of Deer Lake, it's a small airport, but it's a really great hub for accessing western Newfoundland. So you're going to begin by flying into the Deer Lake Regional Airport, and you're going to pick up a rental car. There are daily flights on Air Canada from more eastern parts of Canada to Deer Lake. There are direct flights from Toronto, Montreal, and Halifax. There are some other smaller budget and regional airlines that can get you there as well, but you're probably going to have a stopover in a more major Canadian airport before making your way to Deer Lake. So in order to rent a car, especially when we're talking about travel in the East Coast of Canada, car rentals can become a little bit tricky because availability is a little lower. And so if you're planning on taking a trip like this and renting a car, which you absolutely should, you're going to want to make sure that you plan that in advance. Several months in advance is ideal. The earlier, the better. Just to make sure, I mean, it's only for a week that we're talking in terms of this car rental, but you just want to make sure that you have a car available to you for the whole trip. It's not a part of the world where you just want to show up and hope for the best, because chances are someone's already booked it. So just make sure that you've arranged that in advance, because it's going to completely change the trajectory of your trip. And from Deer Lake, you're going to drive straight to Gros Morne National Park. So this is a beautiful park that's located in western Newfoundland. It's mountainous. It's one of the most photographed national parks in eastern Canada. Its mountain range is actually part of the Long Range Mountains, which is an extension of the Appalachian Mountains. So it's you think about eastern Canada, you don't necessarily think about mountains, but that's definitely the case here in western Newfoundland. You're going to drive to Gros Morne from Deer Lake. It's about an hour and a half drive, so it's a pretty reasonable distance. And you're going to make your way to Woody Point. Woody Point is located in the bottom of the Tablelands in Gros Morne National Park. It is a beautiful small town with a pretty extensive history. There are not a lot of restaurants or accommodations, but the ones that are there are excellent. So the nice thing is that the choices are limited, but they're good ones. So you're going to drive to Woody Point, and you're going to check into your accommodation and get acquainted with your surroundings. There are several different excellent accommodations in and around Woody Point. Many of them are self-catering apartments or cabins. Some are inns. The Bonbay Inn and the rooms at Woody Point are well-regarded. Again, they're small accommodations. So if you're planning this trip and you want to make sure that you're making the most of each day and each night, I'd recommend booking in advance if you can, just to make sure that you can get a spot. At the time that my partner Chris and I were visiting, unfortunately, we couldn't get any rooms in Woody Point, also because there was a very large and amazing writers festival happening at that time, which I'll get into more details about later. But basically, you just want to make sure that you're booking whatever accommodation you plan on staying at in advance. So once you get yourself situated, you're going to want to focus on finding a place for dinner. You've had a long travel day. You're probably not going to be up for doing very much after getting your rental car and heading into town. And so I'd recommend going to a cozy dinner at one of the few restaurants in Woody Point. So Backroom Cafe, Merchant Warehouse, and the Old Loft Restaurant are your best bets in town. They're all very warm, accommodating, similar menus. They offer a lot of seafood. Hopefully you're a fan of seafood, because that will be in abundance on this trip, especially cod. Cod is the famous fish of Newfoundland. It is the most beloved, and you'll find it on almost every menu. So once you have a cozy dinner and you go back to your accommodation to relax, this is the start of our trip, because on day two, you're going to want to wake up pretty early, because the goal of day two is to tackle a little bit more of Gros Morne National Park.
Okay.
So on day two, you're going to wake up and you're going to head to the Gros Morne Discovery Center, which is located just beyond the reaches of Woody Point. You'll want to drive up. The Gros Morne Discovery Center is a great place to learn more about the park and its geology. The park has a geological feature called the Tablelands, which feels a lot like Table Mountain in South Africa, and a lot of other famous tableland geological features around the world. They are beautiful, and it's really interesting to learn more about its geological form. So at the Discovery Center, there are opportunities to watch videos about the park and learn more about their preservation processes and some of the different things to do while you're there. It's also a great place to get your permits at the park and speak to park rangers and have them help you plan out how to spend your time a little bit better.
Okay. And we're going to need permits for what in the park?
Good question. So the permits for the park are for each day that you plan on exploring the park. When you stay in Woody Point, even though it's located in the park, you don't need a permit to be staying overnight in town. You do need a permit for the days that you are exploring and checking out different hiking trails or camping in the park. In this case, my recommendation would be to stay in roofed accommodations, so you won't need to worry about each day that your vehicle's in the park, but it's more for the days that you're driving around it. So they'll coach you through it, because for me, to be honest, it was a bit of a gray area. I think that they make it flexible so that people who actually live in the park aren't having to pay a park fee for every day they live in the park, because there are some towns in the park that have been there for longer than the park has existed. But so for us, we booked, I think that we booked 3 or 4 days worth of permits, and that allowed us to see other parts of the park that we drove up to later, which I'll get into as well. So I don't know if that's a very clear overview of how the permits work, but either way, it's Parks Canada. The staff there are very helpful, and they'll walk you through. If you walk in with a plan of these are the things that I want to see, they'll let you know what permit makes sense for you and make sure that you don't get into trouble. Once you've gone to the Discovery Center, then you have an option of how you want to spend your time in the park. And this comes down to what sorts of activities are really exciting for you. So there are many people who plan to hike the Tablelands. If this is your plan, and I guess I should have said this earlier, but if this is your plan, you're going to have to get up a heck of a lot earlier than just moseying over to the Discovery Center, because a lot of people who plan to hike to the very top of the Tablelands, like where it plateaus at the top, need to start that trek pretty early in the morning. I didn't do it myself just because of the time constraints on the trip we were on. It didn't really work out with our reasons for being there, but you do need to start quite early. So there are guided hikes that you can do up to the top. I believe you can also go on your own. I'm not sure, but you should probably speak to someone at Parks Canada about that before you go. And so either way, if you plan on having a really long day hiking, then you can hike to the top of the Tablelands. There are also some really beautiful walks that you can take that go to the base of the Tablelands. That's what we did during our time there. It was an accessible way for us to just walk on a really nice nature trail for a couple of hours, get a sense for the Tablelands and be at the base of them, but not walk all the way up.
And I'm seeing that the walk all the way up is a, quote, challenging 1 day, 16 kilometer loop.
Yes, exactly. So it's not something to just on a whim decide you're doing. You would want to make sure that you have ample water and snacks and all of that sort of thing ready, because it's very remote. So yes, and I know that there were people that we ran into who they fly to Western Newfoundland specifically because they want to hike the Tablelands. And so there are some people who come here just for that. If you're just trying to get a taste for many parts of Western Newfoundland and Labrador while you're here, then maybe a full 1 day hike doesn't make sense for you, but that is an option.
And I'm seeing the summit is only open July to late October, which begs the question of when did you go and when are you recommending we're doing this trip?
Yes. And I had thought about mentioning this earlier, but I think I forgot. So yeah, actually you'll find that a lot of things in Newfoundland and Labrador are only open from mid-June to about mid-October. A trip to this part of the country, you're going to want to go around that time. We went in August. We had pretty great weather overall during the time that we were there. Many Newfoundlanders and Labradorians will say that August, September, October are your better, maybe more predictable summer months almost. Open, but visibility could be poor. There might be a lot of rain and high winds. Either way, when you go to Newfoundland and Labrador, you're just committing to the fact that the weather might be inclement and you just want to make sure that you're packing the right clothes. So make sure you have a rain jacket that you're ready to wear all the time if need be, and waterproof shoes and that whole sort of thing. So yes, it's not open all year round. So it's another reason to plan for your car rental and your accommodations, because you have a narrow time frame that you're working within. And other people who have this part of the world on their bucket list are also planning for the same trip. So you want to make sure that you're being not strategic, but you're planning in advance.
And I have to ask, because we're 20 minutes into this interview or something like that, and every time we go to name the name of the province, we're using the whole name, and it's rather long.
Yes.
Do the people there abbreviate for just, depending on which region you're in, just Newfoundland or Labrador, or do they always say the whole thing every time?
That's an excellent question. So I wanted to make sure that I got the history right on this, because mm-hmm. there's a reason for that. So Newfoundland is the island itself called Newfoundland, right. and Labrador is the piece of land that is on the mainland, which connects mm-hmm. to northern Quebec and kind of shoulders Nunavut near the north. So its history is pretty complex. So Newfoundland was actually the final region to join the provinces of Canada in the mm-hmm. 1950s, because prior to that, it had been a self-governing, what was the term?
Crown
a British dominion. It had been dominion, a self-governing okay. British dominion up until, and it, not the 1950s, 1949. So people drove on the left-hand side up until that point. They were Newfoundlanders. They really strongly identified with that. So when they joined Canada, a lot of things along that line changed. They had always had a history with Labrador as well. Labrador was seen as New France and Lower Canada in its early days as being part of Canada. Still to this day, many people from the province of Quebec still believe that they have land rights to Labrador. That's not true. But the land of Labrador has also been disputed over for years. And it was only recently, within the past 20 years, that Newfoundland and Labrador were officially a province together. They've always been closely associated. They're now considered one whole province. And so the reason that I say the whole name when I say Newfoundland and Labrador is just to make sure that one isn't forgotten, because
sure.
if you ask locals who are from there, they'll identify as either Newfoundlanders or Labradorians. And it's not like they have
okay.
bad blood between the two, but they are two very distinct places with very distinct histories. So yeah, it's a mouthful. And that's because it's two really separate but unified histories cohabitating okay. in one province.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I hope I did that justice. And if anyone is hearing this and thinks I got it a little bit wrong, please, by all means, correct me. But it's complicated. And it's definitely a history worth understanding. Because as a Canadian, I feel like I had a fraction of understanding of the true history of that province growing up. And it's not until you visit it that you see it in, right in front of you and you understand it better.
Excellent. You were visiting the national park.
Okay, so if you want to take a hike while you're in Gros Morne, you can hike to the top of the Tablelands like we talked about. There are also more accessible hikes and smaller hikes that you can take, which are a really great thing to plan to do if you just want to get a taste. If hiking isn't really your thing, you can also explore the national park by driving throughout it. Woody Point is on a body of water called the East Arm, which is an inlet from the ocean, and it feels almost like a fjord, really. It's not mm-hmm. a fjord, but that's what it feels like. So there are a lot of really beautiful towns that you can drive to and visit that way. You can also drive up to the town of Trout River, which is further along the ocean. And there are different places to see along that route as well. If you're interested in getting out on the water, there are two ways that I would recommend to do that. So you can go sea kayaking with Gros Morne Adventures. I did this out of Norris Point, which is across the way from Woody Point when I was there. And it's a really beautiful way to see the ocean and the Tablelands all together. The views from the water are absolutely stunning. So unless you have a fear of water, which hopefully you don't if you're traveling to this part of the world, then I would highly recommend that you do something like that. A more accessible way to get on the water if kayaking is something that you're not too comfortable with is you can take a scenic boat tour of East Arm with Bon Bay Tours. I believe the tour is run for approximately an hour. There are different versions that you can take, and they'll take you through to the very end of East Arm and all the way back up through the inlet. And they just describe the history of this section of Gros Morne National Park, the Tablelands, the geological features, and that sort of thing.
I'm seeing that's a 2-hour tour, although possibly there's an exchange rate between Canada and the U.S.
No, that's perfect. And I never actually took that tour. They also operate ferries. So I did take one of their ferries. So great. A 2-hour tour, that probably makes a little more sense. So that is something that you can do also to get out on the water around there. So whichever way you've decided to spend your morning, or maybe a little more than your morning, I always like to decompress and take a moment to just enjoy my natural surroundings. And so I'd highly recommend going back to Woody Point, and maybe before going back to your accommodation, going to Galliot Studios and Cafe. It's a really lovely independently owned cafe brewing local coffee from Grossmorne Coffee Roasters, and it doubles as a pottery studio. And the owner, her name escapes me right now, but she is lovely. And they have a back patio area on a little wharf and dock that overlooks East Arm. And on a sunny day with a fresh cup of coffee, it's a really wonderful place to just re-energize for the rest of your day. I'd highly recommend stopping there.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Masterclass. I've been in business for a while, so I could teach a class on business, but wouldn't you rather learn from Mark Cuban? And I've done some community theater, so I could teach a class on acting, but wouldn't you rather learn from Natalie Portman? Picture the thing you've always wanted to learn. Now picture learning it from the person who is literally the best at it in the world. That's what you're going to get with Masterclass. This year, learn from the best so you can be your best. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass helps you actually do it. With over 180 world-class instructors, Masterclass has you covered. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to one-on-one classes with the world's best. And right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/traveler. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/traveler. That's masterclass.com/traveler. And thanks to Masterclass for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Depending on the time of year that you're in Woody Point, so I think I mentioned earlier, but at the time my husband Chris and I were there, we were also there for a Canadian literature writing festival. So it's called The Writers at Woody Point. It takes place in August. So even if you're not from Canada, and if you're interested in writing and literature and how literature defines a place or complements a place, if you will, it's a really magical festival to go to. So we had heard really great things about this festival, and essentially it's just a place for Canadian writers and creatives and musicians to come together. There are a series of talks over 5 days, and you can purchase tickets for the conversations that you'd love to hear during your time there. I was face to face with some pretty famous Canadian authors that I had to ask to get up so I could get to my seat. It's a really beautiful little intimate theater that this all takes place in. It's called the Woody Point Heritage Theater. And anyway, so that's my little nod to the Writers at Woody Point Festival. So if that's the sort of thing that you're into, I'd highly recommend it. But basically, the community in Woody Point is very special, and rings true for many other communities in Gros Bourne National Park. So while you're there, maybe just check it out to see if there's anything going on that's worth visiting aside from just the tourist things, and then take some time back at your accommodation to relax and get set for another big travel day. Woody Point and the communities just beyond Woody Point on this trip are going to be the last major towns where you'll be able to find a lot of variety of groceries and baked goods and that sort of thing.
Say major towns. I'm seeing the population of Woody Point as 282.
Yeah, they're small. And a huge part of Newfoundland's history and Labrador's history too is that for so long, they were these teeny tiny fishing communities that were never connected by land. These towns are actually significantly larger than the towns that used to exist where it was 15, 20 people. Because there was also a part of Newfoundland's history where when they joined Canada, the Canadian government said, we can't service all of your fishing communities. You need to abandon your fishing communities and move in closer to the mainland, which was also a huge challenge. So it's interesting because, yes, population-wise, these towns don't seem very big, but in Western Newfoundland, they are more major, especially before you continue north. That's just my little reminder that when you're taking a road trip in this corner of Newfoundland, you're not going to expect to see large grocery stores and large convenience stores along the way. So if you see a place to get bottled water, go for it, or a place to refill on gas, then you should definitely take advantage, because there are some parts of Canada where it's illegal to drive without a jerry can of gas in your car. That's not what we're dealing with yet, but it is important to consider your resources on a road trip like this.
Okay.
On day three, we're going to wake up for a large travel day, which will very much be worth it. You're going to make your way again. If you want to grab a couple snacks before you leave this kind of corner of Newfoundland, you can. And you're going to make your way up to Western Brook Pond. Western Brook Pond is possibly the most famous place in Western Newfoundland and potentially the most famous place in all of the province. It was a fjord in its early days because it was formed by ocean water, but today it's a fresh lake that's several kilometers back from the road. It's a beautiful place to go. And you're going to drive up the highway to the parking lot. So this is still part of Gros Bourne National Park. And you're going to park your car, and then it's actually a significant walk to get to the lake. It's about 3 kilometers each way. So if you are someone who takes a little bit of time, it's by no means a challenging hike. It's a relatively flat walk. If walking takes a little longer for you, or if you've left late, then it's important to make sure you're on time and make sure you're early, because you are having a large walk on either side of this activity. You're going to want to walk the 3 kilometers through the scenic bogs and lowlands until you reach the fjord, where you'll take a boat tour to see. That's the only way that you can see Western Brook Pond. The boat tour at Western Brook Pond is also operated by Bombay Tours, so the same operator that operates outside of Woody Point and Norris Point. This I know, I think. Maybe I don't. Maybe it's 2 hours. I'm remembering 1 hour, but maybe it's 2 hours.
I wasn't going to fact check you on this one. That's okay.
But now I'm not sure. But either way, it's a really incredible boat tour that takes you from, it's really magical to remember this experience because it's so unassuming from where you get into this boat. And then it starts to take you out onto this fjord, and you round your first corner, and you're just surrounded by these huge mountains that are so impressive, and they jut straight into the lake. And you feel like you're somewhere like Norway. Like it just, it's such a beautiful natural formation here in Gros Bourne.
I'm seeing rock cliffs and waterfalls all over the place.
It's beautiful. There are ways to hike here as well. Some people get boated to a starting point for a multi-day hike that can take you to the top of Western Brook Pond, which would be absolutely incredible. I've seen photos and videos and it looks amazing. Again, it didn't really work into my timeline for this trip, and I don't think it would work into a 7-day itinerary, but it is a really beautiful place to go. It's also very popular. Like I said, it's potentially the most popular natural site in Newfoundland, and there are only 2 boats. They had a really special way that they got the boats into this lake. They had to corral them. It was just described to me, but I can't remember how. But either way, there are only 2 boats. One carries 70 passengers. The other carries 90. I believe there are only 3 or 4 cruises a day. And there are a lot of people who take these tours. So again, if this is something you want to do, book it in advance. That's how a lot of this trip goes, because you want to make sure that you're going to hit all of these things. Yes, definitely want to book in advance. So once you've had your tour, you're going to continue your way up the coast towards more northwestern Newfoundland. On the way, you can stop at Arches Provincial Park. It's a beautiful little park with some rock arches on the water that are very scenic. If you want to have a little picnic here or a break before continuing on, you can. Your final destination will be St. Barb in northwestern Newfoundland. This is where you're going to catch the ferry across the Strait of Belle Isle that will take you across to Labrador. The company that operates the ferries across to Labrador is called Labrador Marine. Again, the theme here, book it in advance, especially if you have a car and you want to make sure that your car can get on this ferry, book it in advance. You're going to have to arrive at St. Barb 2 hours in advance of your departure of your ferry, so make sure that you get the timing just right on this day. There is a hotel located by the ferry dock, so if you're trying to plan this out and you'd rather take an early morning ferry and stay at the hotel here, you can. And so you're going to take the ferry from St. Barb to Blanc-Sablon, Quebec. So this is at the very northeastern part of Quebec, but right on the border of Labrador. It's worth noting that the time difference in Quebec is 1.5 hours behind Newfoundland and Labrador time. So you might be a little shocked when you arrive and you've somehow gained 1.5 hours. But then as soon as you cross into Labrador, if you have a phone or something that's just going to automatically change your time, then you'll realize you've lost 1.5 hours all over again. So it's very confusing because of its location. But don't worry, you haven't lost your mind like I thought I did for a moment there. It's just that you're in a place that kind of teeters between two parts of time. So from Blanc-Sablon, it's a short drive to enter the official south coast of Labrador. Labrador is nicknamed the Big Land for a good reason. It's a very large area. And because of the constraints of this trip and the constraints of a 7-day itinerary here too, you're not going to be able to get very far in Labrador, but it is very special, this corner of Labrador.
Okay.
So along the south coast, you're going to drive up to Red Bay, which is approximately a 1.5 hour drive. In Canada, we talk about drives in time. I don't know. I've heard that's a Canadian thing to do. Is that, I don't know, is that something American?
Not necessarily.
Is it distant? But... okay. So I'm talking about drives in time. So it's going to take you about 1.5 hours to get up to Red Bay. By the end of this long day, you're probably not going to have a lot of time to explore Red Bay. You'll do that on the way back. But it's worth noting that Red Bay has a pretty extensive whaling history, and it's connected several hundreds of years back to the Basque population who came over from south of France and north Spain. But we'll get into that later. So you're going to stay in Red Bay. Talking about small towns, I think Red Bay is only a population of 300 people or something like that. So again, it's very small. The Whalers Restaurant in Red Bay is the only place to eat, I'm pretty sure. And it's great. It's very nice. The people who run that restaurant are lovely. So that's a great place to have dinner. It's really your only option in town. There are some places to stop on your way up to Red Bay as well. But just again, bearing in mind that options are limited. And Red Bay Cabins is also an excellent accommodation as well. So it's all connected there. It's just a nice place to stay overnight. On day 4, you're going to wake up early. There wasn't much breakfast. So again, this is where your car snacks come in to play. So just that we found there wasn't much in the way of breakfast. So you're going to wake up early and drive from Red Bay to Mary's Harbor to catch the ferry to Battle Harbor, which I'll get into in a moment. Mary's Harbor is another small town. It doesn't really have any sorts of restaurants or cafes for breakfast, but there is a place called Sim's Cash and Carry, which is just an all-encompassing grocery store with everything that you would need. So if you need a little snack, you can go there before you check in for your experience at Battle Harbor. Battle Harbor is a centuries-old fishing village, which is a Canadian National Historic Site. I've personally traveled pretty extensively, and it's honestly one of the most unique travel experiences I've ever had. It is a very special place. In terms of learning and understanding the history of Newfoundland and Labrador, it is an excellent place to go to better understand this part of the world. Battle Harbor is a small island off the coast of Labrador. For 2 centuries, it was the economic and social center of the southeastern Labrador coast. The saltfish premises were established here in the early 1770s. And fisher people, fisher families would come from far and wide to fish for cod, and for seal and other things like that from the very early days, often in extreme weather conditions and challenging conditions. But so today, it's a National Historic District Island retreat and a place that you can go to stay in and experience and live in this history of this historic fishing village. It's a very special experience. It is a completely preserved fishing settlement and opens your eye into what remote fishing communities looked like in Newfoundland and Labrador for centuries prior to when it became part of Canada, and many of these fishing villages had to cease to exist. They offer 4-star all-inclusive accommodations in historic buildings. And so you get to just be here and be in this place. And if you have any interest in history at all, it's such a special experience. I know that there are many places where you can go and stay in historical buildings and they're renovated. And I don't know, they just do it right here. It's also operated by the Battle Harbour Historic Trust. So they have a lot of responsibility in terms of preserving this place and also ensuring that all visitors understand its history a lot better. Almost all of the staff who work there are also people who either had generations of family members who lived on Battle Harbour or came to Battle Harbour for fishing over the years, or they're from Newfoundland and Labrador and care very deeply about this place. Actually, when we were visiting, there was a funeral taking place on Battle Harbour, and that was because a woman who was born on Battle Harbour and her husband had also been born on Battle Harbour, they had to move to Mary's Harbour, which was on the mainland. But either way, she passed away and her funeral was taking place on the mainland, and she was brought over to Battle Harbour to be buried next to her husband. And the generations before her had also been buried there too. So there's a lot of very special connection to this place on the island. So when you go, you have to arrive an hour before your ferry when you check into Battle Harbour. So again, you have to drive to Mary's Harbour. You leave your car there. It'll be totally safe. They have a little area where they keep all the vehicles. And then you take a small passenger ferry over to Battle Harbour. It takes about an hour. It's a beautiful boat ride, very serene. There were seals that were popping in and out of the water to greet us on our way. Depending on the time of year, if you're going in the earlier summer months, like June, there are many icebergs in and around this part of Newfoundland and Labrador. So it's possible that you'll see icebergs in the distance or just pieces of ice kind of floating around. We didn't see them in our time in August because they're usually gone by then, but you never know. Once you descend on Battle Harbour, it's very magical. It feels like you're in a living piece of history, and it feels like you've been transported back like 200 years to just this fishing village that exists in the same way today as it did hundreds of years ago. You have all of your meals covered when you go to Battle Harbour. So they're all communal meals that you have with other travelers as well. There's no cell phone service. It's a true place to disconnect. It really feels like you've stepped back in time. And we developed such great connections with the other travelers that we met while we were there too. So that kind of adds to just how special this place is, because everyone's just in awe of it.
And I had to look up, because I'm thinking, what battle would have happened in Battle Harbour? I suppose you already know the answer to this, which is none.
Yeah, it's a translation, but I actually forgot. Do you have the information there?
It's a corruption of the Portuguese word for boat, B-A-T-E-L.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I forgot about that too, because I also remember when we were going and I was trying to figure out what the battle was. But yes, it was to do with the Portuguese fishermen that came across years ago. And it's just a very interesting blend of so many different histories and cultures, for sure. And so once you get to Battle Harbour, you'll have lunch. And then there are many different activities that you can do while you're there. If you have a couple extra days that you can squeeze into this trip, then I would highly recommend spending more than one night. But one night is totally fine. We met many travelers who were there for a night. When you get there, you're going to have a quick orientation about the island. They'll bring you to your accommodation. And then after you've settled in a little bit, you definitely have to take the free walking tour around the island. It's always led by someone with a very deep connection to the history of Battle Harbour.
Okay.
So our tour guide, she works for Battle Harbour Historic Trust, but our guide, Jan, her parents and grandparents on both sides came to Battle Harbour every year her father was a fisherman, and she remembers that they were living in Newfoundland, and if the whole family didn't join him, then they just wouldn't see him. So she spent 20 summers growing up on Battle Harbor. And so every year she'd come back and she'd go to school at the little schoolhouse at the start of the fall, and then she'd go back to Newfoundland. And her mother was Inuit and her father was European background from Newfoundland. And it was just a really beautiful story of how the meeting place for her family's history is on Battle Harbor, because that's where her parents met as well. And basically just every person who will take you through a tour of Battle Harbor has such a unique tie to this place, and hearing their stories and just how much they're passionate about this island and its value is a really special part of visiting as well. When you're on Battle Harbor, you'll learn, if you don't know already about it, about the 1992 cod moratorium and how that completely changed the fishing history or the fishing practices in Newfoundland and Labrador. So this was in the 90s when there were way too many commercial boats fishing in Canadian waters. And so they just decided to completely cease all cod fishing, commercial cod fishing, I should say. And so for a place whose livelihood was so dependent on cod fishing to be completely eradicated just in the blink of an eye in the 90s, absolutely changed so many people in Newfoundland and Labrador. It's a really important thing to learn about as a tourist when you're visiting, because so many local people's livelihoods were affected, and it changed generationally who was able to stay in Newfoundland. So a huge part of tourism in Newfoundland, which is really important, is it's something that offers a lot of jobs and opportunities for people who still live in the province, because so many people have had to leave because cod fishing was such a huge part of their history. So that's a whole story within itself, but learning about Battle Harbor and the importance of remote fishing villages like this and the effect of the cod moratorium on them is another really important part of visiting this place.
Okay.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you're at Battle Harbor, you can also hike in and around the surrounding islands. You can try your hand at historic cod fishing practices, like with just a single line, fishing line, and just yanking on it until a fish appears. There are ways that they can take you out and demonstrate this for you if you want. There's also a small hill on Battle Harbor, so you can go up over the hill and look over at the surrounding islands. And there's even a plane wreck on the back of the hill, which was another unique part of the history where nobody knew it was there for a couple days, and then they found a wrecked plane. Obviously, in this part of the world, there's a lot of mist. It can get very misty and visibility can come and go very quickly. And being here, you'll see that, and you'll see how a plane absolutely could have crashed on Battle Harbor without anyone knowing. So after an evening on Battle Harbor, you'll stay overnight, you'll wake up for breakfast. And then in the morning on day five, you're going to have the early ferry back to the mainland to get back to your car. I could talk about Battle Harbor for hours, so I hope that I did this place justice, but it really, truly is such an amazing destination when you're in this corner of the province. So you have to tearfully leave Battle Harbor, I'm sorry to say, but on your way, make sure you keep an eye out for any other icebergs or seals or any other wildlife. Be reunited with your car in Mary's Harbor, and then you're going to head back down the South Labrador coast with stops along the way. So this will be the opportune time for you to actually explore Red Bay, because on the way up, given how the timing works with the ferries, you probably wouldn't have much time to check it out on your way there.
Okay.
So on your way back, stop in Red Bay and go to the Basque Whaling Station. It's a 16th century Basque whaling station and one of the best examples of a preserved one in the world. There's also the Whalers Museum and the Red Bay UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is where they've found traces of early 16th century Spanish galleon ships and where all of the Basque people made their place, made their stake in whaling in the Labrador Sea. So it's a very interesting place. You can take a boat across to the island there and see a lot of the archaeological pieces that they've discovered. Have lunch again at Whaler's Restaurant. It's a great place to have another meal on your way back because you're probably going to want to have lunch. And then you're going to continue back down the Labrador Strait. Keep your eye out for icebergs along the coast because, especially like I was saying, if you go in kind of June or July, you're much more likely to see large icebergs just flowing through, but they can come through any time of year.
Okay.
Other notable spots along this drive are the Point of Moore Lighthouse. This is the second largest lighthouse in Canada. It has a very large historic light that you can walk all the way to the top to admire. There's also Lance au Loup, which is the largest town on the Labrador Strait, which isn't saying much because it's still quite small. And Lance au Claire, another small town. There are also some really beautiful coastal hikes connecting these towns, which we didn't have time for while we were there, but they sound really beautiful hiking along the Labrador Strait. And it would probably be best on your way down to stay in the town of Fourteau. We've stayed at the Florian Hotel. This is very close to the ferry back to Newfoundland, which you'll probably want to take in the early morning on the following day. Okay. The Florian Hotel is owned by Angela, who's also well known for her Basque Labrador fusion cuisine. So while we were there, there happened to be a multi-course menu that was taking place. So we were able to dine on kind of Basque Labrador fusion. So we had everything from different fish. We had cod and we had fish roe and we had a lot of different kind of cheese dishes. And anyways, I can't really describe it. It was a very unique meal, but it was delicious. And even one of the courses was served on a freshly chipped block of ice from an iceberg that had passed through the strait. So it's a really okay. memorable way to round out your time in Labrador with beautiful views across the Strait of Belle Isle. And so with a full belly, you can have a nice, relaxing sleep at the Florian Hotel before day six, where you wake up and take the ferry back to Newfoundland. So again, for taking the ferry, make sure you book it in advance and be very aware of the time. It's very confusing, and this is something important to note. Mm-hmm. The ferries are all run on Newfoundland time, even though it's departing from Quebec. We had friends who got confused by this. And to be honest, Chris and I, it didn't even occur to us that they would not be on Newfoundland time, which we probably, if we were overthinking enough, we probably should have thought about that, but we didn't. But so we had friends thinking, okay, this ferry is leaving from Quebec. It's going to leave an hour and a half ahead of the time that we expect. Anyways, don't miss your ferry. So just triple check the time, triple check like when you need to be there, but they do run on Newfoundland time and you'll need to get there 2 hours in advance of your ferry as well. You'll take the ferry back to St. Barb, and then you're going to start making your way back down the way that we came. So along the way, this is a great opportunity to stop at any of the places in and around Gros Morne National Park that you may have missed. Also, if you didn't have time for Arches Provincial Park on the way up, you can stop on the way down. There's also a really beautiful lighthouse called Lobster Cove Headlight Lighthouse. It's in Gros Morne National Park, and it looks out over the Tablelands and East Arm from high up above. It has stunning views and the lighthouse itself is very historic. And then on your way back, since you stayed in Woody Point in Gros Morne National Park on the way up, I think that you should stay in either Rocky Harbor or Norris Point. So both of these towns are just straight across from Woody Point. And where Woody Point is at the base of the Tablelands, Norris Point and Rocky Harbor are across from the Tablelands and also across from the sunset. I'm a sucker for sunsets, and I love to find the best place to see a sunset when I travel. And I have to say that watching the sunset over the Tablelands from Norris Point or Rocky Harbor is a very special experience and such a nice way to round out the last evening of your time on this trip. In Norris Point, there are a couple different places that you can stay at. The Tides Inn and Nettie's Harbor Inn are both excellent places to stay. Nettie's Harbor Inn is also especially well known for its amazing restaurant called the Black Spruce Restaurant. This is such a nice place to go, especially for your final night on this trip. I'd recommend going around sunset. And again, I love sunsets, but I'd recommend going around sunset because it offers beautiful views of kind of the rocky cliffs are surrounding it, and you'll see the sunset over the tablelands, and there isn't much more special than that on this trip. So once you've had your final night in town, you're going to finish up on day 7 by having a nice slow morning in Norris Point, walking around and bidding farewell to the tablelands, and you're going to go to the Old Store Cafe for breakfast. It has delicious local coffee. It's also owned by the same family who owns Nettie's Harbor Inn, and they just do such a fantastic job. With everything that they touch, it turns to gold. And that's your farewell to Gros Morne. So you'll start to drive back to Deer Lake, and you'll return your car, and you'll be back on your way.
Now, one of the reasons we're doing so much there and back, I assume, is there are not a lot of airport connection options available further north.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And in Labrador, your only connections would be out of Labrador City, which is quite far from where we are on this trip. So if that's something,
yeah, we're really just dipping a extra time, toe into Labrador here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So if someone had extra time and they wanted to make their way more up along the coast, I would highly recommend that. But yeah, Deer Lake is really your main hub for Western Newfoundland and Labrador.
Okay, excellent. What else do people need to know before they book this trip? I say besides bring snacks.
Besides bring snacks, yes. So yeah, and aside from the time of year, so just knowing the time of year, a few other things I'd recommend are just keeping an open mind. So weather is going to be very unpredictable on this trip, and you're just going to have to go with it no matter what you get. The same goes for restaurants or stores being closed at random times. You might see that something's open if you look on Google, but when you go there, it's closed for the day and no one's going to be coming back. That's what makes a trip to this part of Newfoundland really fun, is just you never really know what you're going to get, and you just have to embrace it. Usually, in my experience, whenever I travel to parts of the world like this, experiences like this lend themselves to more memorable ones. So I guess just go with an open mind. And if things don't go according to plan, or if a ferry has to be rescheduled or something like that, just go with it. It's just going to add to your trip. And it's going to be an amazing trip no matter what. Okay. Aside from that, I guess a couple other things that I wanted to mention. If you have a little extra time on this trip, some other side trips that I would recommend are Lance O'Meadows, which is, it's known as the first
I was known just European. Looking that up. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. So Lance O'Meadows, the only reason I didn't include it on this itinerary is just because of the ferry times.
Okay.
But I would highly recommend going to Lance O'Meadows if you have the time for it. It's the first known European settlement in North America, where Vikings came to what is now Newfoundland around the year 1000. It's a very neat historical site, which is definitely worth visiting. So you can actually see where the outlines of the original Viking homes were. And there are animators there who really, I'm not always the biggest fan of animators, but I have to say they really do a great job here. And it's an amazing feeling to set foot in this place that's been settled, that had been settled so over 1,000 years ago. So that's definitely a really great kind of jumping off point.
And it looks like if we wanted to do that right around the time you got on the ferry, one way or the other, add in another day to go just a little further up to the tip of Newfoundland.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
It would be around the time that you go up on the ferry, or you're about to cross the ferry over to Labrador, which is when you'd want to stay up that way. And so there are a couple different kind of self-catering kind of Airbnb style cabin options up that way. But yes, it's definitely very much worth it. And if you're into history or Viking history or Norse history or any of that sort of thing, it's definitely worth it. Another side trip or extension that you could think about doing is to continue on the Labrador Highway to Labrador City. That was something that we really would have loved to do on this trip, but it just didn't work out with the timing since we were covering so much ground across the province. We met a lot of different travelers who were coming from Labrador City, and they had such great things to say about the drive itself. Labrador is very vast, and the small sample that we had of highway driving in Labrador was truly beautiful, and a lot of it is untouched. So this would also be something I'd highly recommend. And on the way back down before you head off, the city of Cornerbrook is more of a major city in the west of Newfoundland. So if you're looking for a place to load up on groceries, but also understand a little bit more about the history of Western Newfoundland, then Cornerbrook is a good place to go as well.
Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, you are standing in the prettiest spot in Newfoundland or Labrador. where are you standing and what are you looking at?
This was a hard decision for me because there are definitely a few directions I could go with this, but I'm standing on the hill at the top of Battle Harbor, overlooking the rugged landscape and the calm and rough patches of the islands in the Labrador Sea at dusk. And I'm watching the sunset over this historic centuries-old fishing village.
Interesting. I thought you were going to go with the national park. Well, that's very interesting to hear.
I also thought I was going to go to the national park. Honestly, it's a win. You can't go wrong with either of these. But yeah, there are just a lot of very special, memorable highlights on this trip, which is why I wanted to talk about it so much, because I think a lot of people should experience it.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Newfoundland and Labrador, besides the half-hour time change, which, you know, still is strange to me. The only half-hour time change in the Americas.
When you go somewhere and like someone sees their neighbor, like just the connections in Newfoundland, the connections that people have to each other. Like we went to that writers festival and one of our friends, her friend was the mom of this very famous Canadian radio host. And she was like, oh, I remember when he was a little kid and we were at Battle Harbor and we happened to be staying there at the same time as Alan Doyle, who was the lead singer of the famous Canadian folk band Great Big Sea. And he just started playing the guitar at night at Battle Harbor and singing with his angelic voice for all of us. So I think just the connections between people and the music and the culture. And I don't know if it necessarily makes me laugh, but it is just, it's a place where everybody feels so deeply connected.
Okay. And if you had to summarize this province in just three words, what three words are you going to use?
Adventure, nature, and history. I think that those would have to be my top three because it's just, it really has everything. It has a little bit of everything for every traveler.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Bree Mitchell from travelingmitch.com. And Bree, if we wanted to send people to your best post on Newfoundland and Labrador on travelingmitch.com, where are we going to send them?
So we have quite a few articles on Traveling Mitch about Newfoundland and Labrador, but I think a really great jumping off point is to go to Chris's article about what I learned spending one memorable month in Newfoundland and Labrador. Okay. I also did a deep dive on Battle Harbor on the website as well, which I have to give a shout out to. It's also such a special place. So either of those articles are a great place to start.
Excellent. And you had mentioned in terms of if people want to get in contact with you, did you want to share your socials?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm on most social media platforms at Bree Mitchell Travels. I'm most active on Instagram, but you can find me anywhere. In addition to our website, travelingmitch.com, I also run weexplorecanada.com and ultimateontario.com with our team of people. We have two excellent websites there as well. So if you're planning a larger trip to Canada and other parts of the country, then I'd also recommend that you head that way. But yeah, at Bree Mitchell Travels is the best place to reach me.
Excellent. Bree, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for, and I only have to say it one more time, Newfoundland and Labrador.
You are so welcome, Chris, and thank you so much for letting me share about this amazing corner of Canada.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
I'd like to give a special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially, especially the three new patrons, Crystal Bullthuis, Julie Locklear, and Holly Barner. Thanks for supporting the show. It's possible that Julie, Holly, and Crystal realize that as we start booking the 2025 trip to Cuba, people who are patrons of the show get the first chance to book. Crystal said, I've been a loyal listener for years, and I thought it was time that I contribute something. I listen to many travel podcasts, and yours is hands down the best, although Rick Steves is a close second. Thanks. That's a nice company to be named in. But also, Holly and Julie just went with me to Morocco. So, hi, Holly and Julie. It's good to talk to you again. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show or just learning more, go to patreon.com/amateur traveler. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.